Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of Pitchos.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined on this Wednesday by Nick Pollock. Yes, it's Wednesday. Yes, we are still only going to cover this weekend's games and next week. But Nick, why Wednesday?
What is happening? I'm going off to Pittsburgh, and I will actually be at PNC Park on Saturday night. Never been there. So if you're going to be at that game, let me know. That'd be cool to meet you. I'll be hobbling around in my lovely Achilles injury boot. So it'd be hard to miss.
Is there surgery coming for you?
No, non-surgical route.
Okay.
That's, just gotta do good PT.
Platelet injections.
Yes. Nope. Yeah, of course, because I wanted just the lay surgery. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, PNC Park. Apparently, I've also never been there. Apparently, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful park. I'm excited for you to experience that Saturday. Also, you're going to see the Red Sox.
That is right. I'm going to see actually a really fun matchup. I'm going to be able to see Jared Jones
and go Sonny against Gray.
The Red Sox. And I'm going to go with, oh my gosh, Sonny Gray. It'd be lovely, lovely sunny skies, I'm sure.
Yes, the now slumping Red Sox. But instead of starting with the AL East, which is where the Red Sox are, we're going to start with the NL East. And we're going to start with the Braves. This Saturday, they have three against Arizona. And then next week, it's Minnesota and the White Sox. It's going to be a two-start week for Martin Perez, Minnesota and Milwaukee. Martin Perez, who delivered against the Mets and kind of keeps delivering. Is this a Vargas rule for you in this two-start stretch for Martin Perez?
Yeah, so you guys will have seen the roundup, the Martin, of course, with Matt Damon. And this is actually, this is a Vargas rule. He's a good win chance guy. When he is grooving and he has his changeup working like he did massively on Tuesday nights, Martin Perez is worth your attention.
Tyler Mahle is going to pitch Wednesday, but Tyler Mahle's first start with the Braves was pretty good from a result standpoint. I'm curious if you saw anything different. I know you've been like in on Mahle at times throughout the year. Mm-hmm. We talked about the home park downgrade in terms of his home run issues was a little worrisome, but in what leagues are you interested in Mahle?
I think interestingly, team Toby, he's absolutely worthwhile. So that means 15 teamers. Absolutely.
I got to say, RotoWire currently does not have him in the rotation for next week, but I can't see why they would trade for him and bump him out for, I guess it's Reynaldo Lopez coming back.
Right. And they also have this really strange single game against the White Sox. It looks like on Thursday, the 20th, probably to cover for a rainout previously in the year. So it's this weird moment where it's like three of the Twins, one against the White Sox and three against the Brewers.
And so that's like right now, RotoWire has it being a two-start week for Reynaldo Lopez too on Tuesday and Sunday. But I would have to assume they'll use six starters next week, given that they have seven games next week. So I think you're going to see Mahle, and then Mahle lines up for at Minnesota. And so if you're saying Mahle is a 12-team Toby and he's at Minnesota, even if Minnesota gets Buxton back for that, that feels like it could be a go.
Absolutely.
Moving on to the Marlins. They're at Cincinnati this weekend, so you have to deal with Great American Ballpark. And then they're at Philadelphia and home against Washington. It's two-start week for Jansen Junk, but it's Philadelphia-Washington. And so even though we've been intrigued by Jansen Junk in the past, that would not be something that I am chasing down. We've started to see really good Yuri Perez again.
Yeah. I mean, his four-seamer and sinker combo is an interesting one where he doesn't quite know the right mix between them and also how to locate that four-seamer a bit. Like, he's getting all the good movement now on that heater, but it's not up as much as it needs to, or at least it has been in the past. And he actually did showcase it yesterday, or actually over the weekend, more of the four-seamer focus than the sinker, which is good because the previous start, pretty much all the hits were off of his sinker. The next step after that is, the secondaries. Where are the breakers in the right moments? It is a wonderful foundation, and it's why we were so high on Yuri before the season started, because we thought that this four-seamer and maybe some of the sinker, but really the four-seamer would just create such a good floor. It didn't for a while, and now it's doing that, and I think the sinker is helping with it. So I really do feel that you should be good with Eury at Cincinnati. I mean, I have it as a probable because of the park, yeah. But I feel like you really should have that maybe as an even auto start. So I might even change that. And the Nationals are just not nearly as good, as you mentioned last week.
I think this is pretty like clearly you're comfortable with Sandy and Eury and you're not really comfortable with the rest of the Marlins rotation right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've been comfortable with Sean Manaea. He plays for the Mets. He pitches on Saturday against Washington as part of a three-game series. Then the Mets get the Padres and the White Sox for three each next week. It's two-start week for Nolan McClain, so we don't need to tell you to do that. But Manaea this weekend against Washington, we're going to keep it rolling.
Oh, yeah. Manaea is throwing 93 now. I mean, it's kind of awesome. It's much closer to what we saw in, what, 2024, was it, when he lowered his arm angle and had more velocity? It was under 90 at the beginning of the year, so it's not been an easy road for Manaea, but he's certainly showcased, yeah, my four-seamer is not easy to hit. He threw a ton of strikes to the sweeper last time, and again, the Nationals are not scary.
Yeah, and we talked also, in terms of the Nationals not being scary, we talked about using Christian Scott in this two-start week, taking the Braves start because we felt okay with the Nationals start. The Braves start was fine, you know, but again, as you mentioned, the Nationals, that is a downgrade offensively from facing the Braves. I think I'm comfortable enough to use Christian Scott against the Nationals this weekend. And then we'll see against the White Sox next week. The White Sox, you know, crushed Lodolo yesterday, which I know a lot of people have been doing, but they can hit. And so, you know, I think it might be Christian Scott. We might like wait till 2027 for the full breakout. I think it's just going to be some intermittent flashes this year.
Well, I mean, with Christian Scott, it's actually pretty simple to me what needs to happen. He's doing better with his four-seamer and cutter. At the beginning of the year, we had a lot of questions about the walk rates and strikes, and now he's getting much more comfortable doing the Canibal McSanchez, throwing that cutter upstairs to lefties and having the four-seamer just stay in the upper third finally and get strikes there. And the sweeper is actually in the zone enough. The problem is that there's nothing in the lower third. And when we first saw Christian Scott appear 2 years ago, he did have more of that splitter that was a bigger deal, especially against lefties. And I see nothing in the lower third now. So the eye level isn't changing enough. We need the curve to show it more. We need the splitter to show it more. Maybe just get the sweeper down, but it is more of that a hand of God one, you know, the extra lift. And I won't be so excited about Christian Scott until I really see that. I would expect him to figure that out in the offseason a little bit more. But for now, Washington again, fine. And then the White Sox, fine. I mean, that's obviously the closer one. The other interesting one is Zach Thornton against the Padres. I keep going back and forth on this. I know he just had a successful one, but it's really four-seamer cutter, and it's Koufax helping a lot. I mean, sure, there is good command with it overall, but it's not exceptional, and I'm not really seeing enough in the secondaries to say, oh, Zach Thornton is that kind of guy I can really trust as a Toby moving forward. It's not terrible. It's more of a quality start play, I think, than it is an overall Toby for a 12-teamer.
And I think we said that earlier on, and like, you know, I know potentially you and I are like a little too change-up obsessed with lefties, and we were just saying, I mean, you know, he's I mean, I don't think so, but that was kind of the argument is like, okay, why is this, why were we more confident in like Jake Bennett sustaining success?
Oh, yeah, I know. I still stand by that, yeah.
I do too. And I think a lot of it is having that changeup to fall back on, and Thornton didn't. And so I always felt like, okay, it's six pitches, it's plus command, it's fine. But I always felt like there'd be some rough patches in there. We'll see. He gets the Braves during the week and then the Padres. It's not a great, and then the Brewers after that. So if you wanted to move on from Zach Thornton, if you were in, you know, leagues where you could, you know, pick up somebody else who's floating on the wire, maybe like a Jackson Jobe, who we'll get to later. But that's not a great three start stretch for Zach Thornton to hold.
And by the way, guys, I should mention this time next week, you guys will have access to my baseball dashboard inside the pro dashboard.
Oh, so that excited.
That means that everything that Eric just mentioned, including next three starts and our offensive rank for them, is inside of that dashboard. So you can just look at that game, look at that player and say, okay, who are the next three opponents that he has? And should I make a decision based on that one? There's so many things about it. We'll have more to tell you about it next week. But get hyped for that because literally it is the thing I use. I made the pitcher list website, the player pages, for me so that I could get better analysis. And now I made this as an upgrade to that. So you get access to it next week, guys.
And you know what that dashboard told me yesterday?
What did it tell you, Eric?
It told me that Andrew Painter has really leaned on this changeup.
Yes, he has.
We talked about the splitter being turned into a changeup for Andrew Painter. We also talked about how we wanted to see Andrew Painter pitch backwards a little more and that he did it for one start and then he didn't do it for the next start. But his changeup was his most used pitch in this last start against the Cardinals. Painter will start again on Sunday against Minnesota. I know he had a no-hitter into the sixth or through the sixth, I believe. And then it kind of fell apart for him.
I think it was through five into the sixth.
Into the sixth.
He didn't even finish six innings. He went 5.1, I think.
Yeah, okay. But I saw enough from that where I'm intrigued enough by Andrew Painter where I'm thinking, okay, I still think the four-seam fastball is not good. And I think the four-seam fastball is going to limit his ultimate upside. But could he be, you know, as Paul Spohr always talks about, like a team streamer in a 12-team league where you could use him against 75% of the teams and not against, you know, the top quarter offenses in baseball. Like, I think if he leans into this approach a little bit more, I see that being entirely feasible.
Yeah, so Andrew Painter, three starts. It's kind of funny. The first one, this is since his return, of course. He really went secondary heavy and really had an amazing feel for that changeup down away to lefties. Few four seamers, right? Second game, all of a sudden, four seamer shows up a ton. He throws like 60 pitches, does not have anything nearly close to the same command on secondaries. It was really just, what is this? This is not at all the guy I wanted. Mm-hmm. Then this last one, it was fewer four seamers. It was like 30% as opposed to like 20% or so. And the slider and the sweeper to right handers was excellent. Like, this is the exact location you want for those down and away. It's beautiful. Now, the changeup, which he did throw more than any other pitch, which is cool because he did get a fair number of lefties more so than righties. It floated so much. You actually look at it, he did keep it away, but I'd say half of them are in the upper third and the other half are the bottom third. He did kind of miss the middle, which is nice. It's like, okay, the middle of both worlds. And I feel as if the execution is going to be closer to that than either of the other two. Hey, he had a no hitter through five. Sure. That four seamer, especially as guys get more, sorry, that changeup as teams get more used to Painter in this new approach, I think he wouldn't be able to get away with as many against lefties. While the right-handed approach, I feel like is there-ish. Just needs to get the sinker inside again, which he did in that first one. Also, very small tangent. There is something to be said about these four seamers that are like 95, 96, but are right along the plane of 1,000 cuts is what I call it, which is the y-axis. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you look at the pitch movement plot, like it's just right along it. So it's maybe one horizontal or two horizontal that just always get hit so much more. Yeah. And it's kind of interesting to me. Like Bradish suffered from that for a while, right? He still kind of does. And I know that there are more examples of it. I got to look into why. My thought process is the angle of the bat every time kind of fits with like righty on righty fits with the cut perfectly. Like it's, if you think about it this way, like you have slight tilt on the bat, it's rarely actually flat. So every time you have slight tilt, essentially the cut action that the pitches are getting are going from maybe being slightly behind to closer to the barrel. That's my theory. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there for anybody to think about it. And of course, if Eric, you have any thoughts about it as well.
I would look into that, but it makes sense in the sense that like, yes, your bat is never like flat coming through the zone or rarely. And so, yeah, if you're getting that slight cut, then I do think, and especially from a righty to a righty, it's cutting more toward the middle of the plate as well. So that theory makes sense to me. And then Nick's dashboard will also tell you that Painter's next three starts are against the Twins, the Cardinals, and the Angels. So that is another reason to be into picking up Andrew Painter. Twins, Cardinals, Angels is a pretty good run of opponents in the next three starts for Painter. Wrapping up the NL East with the Nationals. They get the Mets this weekend, and then they are at Texas and at Miami. It is set to be a two-start week next week for Jackson Kent, who is going to debut Wednesday against the Cubs. I wrote up Jackson Kent for the site over on NBC Sports Roto World. I wrote up the blurb when he was called up. I didn't do a full detailed analysis of him.
Okay.
But Jackson Kent is, even in the words of Nationals beat writers, he's a pitchability over stuff guy.
Yes.
He's a lefty with a deep enough arsenal. I believe it's five pitches that they believe it's a five pitch mix. We'll see how that translates to the big leagues. We often see rookies sometimes limit the pitches they're less confident in when they're facing MLB hitters. But you know, it's not overpowering stuff. It's a command focused lefty. And so we've seen that work in the past. If the command is really pristine, if we're getting fastballs up in the zone, if we're getting breakers below the zone, it is not a gamble that I'm willing to take right now until I can see the profile in effect, because it's one thing for a scouting report to tell you somebody has good command. But if that's against AA and AAA hitters, you need to see exactly how precise they can command their arsenal against big league hitters. And data just can't really tell you that. You need to actually see it. And so I would need to see a couple starts from Jackson Kent. And if the start against the Cubs and Tuesday against the Rangers is decent enough, then it's Miami. And like Texas and Miami is not a bad stretch of opponents. So I'm watching, but I'm not adding right now.
So Jackson Kent is the guy that I kind of compared to a discount Connor Prelip. It's from the left side. It is a worse four-seamer. It's at 93, 94. He does have 70 feet of extension, which is cool. I mean, can get to like 16 IVBs. The last game we saw actually was like 14 and 15, which is pretty much dead zone for this 40-degree arm angle. And it's a better changeup with Jackson Kent, which you're gonna, whenever you hear pitchability in the minors from a southpaw, that essentially screams either cutter inside to righty Zach Thornton or a swatch type down and away changeups, right? It's not going to be sliders and curveballs, that stuff, right? So he does try to get that slider down and into right-handers. He can be effective at it. I mean, last game that we saw from Jackson Kent was a lot of that. But over the season, what I'm seeing is a 51% strike rate on that changeup. I'm seeing a 71% strike rate on the slider and about 65% on the four-seamer, where the slider is more of that put-away offering. It is a pitch that has returned about a 21%, 22% put-away rate. It's interesting. I'm curious to see if it actually is that pitchability and if he is able to routinely go through lineups without much worry. He is getting more whiffs lately, though. The last four games in AAA, he's 19 whiffs, 16 whiffs, and 18 whiffs. So maybe there is something there that I need to check on about his changeup. 61%, 42%, 50%, 55% strike rates. Not really what I was hoping to see there for Jackson Kent. So something to note, he's throwing more strikes with his slider now, which is nice. And if you want to spec out in 12-teamer, absolutely for the two-step here. We have the pilot rule. Prospects initial line often terrible. So don't expect much in that first game for Jackson Kent against the Rangers in Arlington. But it might be enough that we say, all right, desperate Sunday at Miami, we're going with Mr. Kent.
Yeah, and then the rest of the rotation, I mean, we trust Cade Cavalli at this point. I'm curious, we've talked enough about Andrew Alvarez. It's the Mets and the Marlins. Could you take a gamble on Andrew Alvarez? And then it's the Rockies in Washington. So okay, it's so Mets, Road. Marlins, Road, Rockies over the next three starts.
Rocky Road, Eric. Rocky Road.
Yeah, whatever. Rocky Road.
Sweet. Sorry. Come on. but Alvarez, they're still not pushing him. Even in that 5.1 game, it was what? Not even 80 pitches. And the sixth inning one was like 81 or 82. So it's, I would still feel icky doing that. The four seamer is very hittable. He does not have a changeup. It's curveball slider focused. I don't really love doing it. Jake Irvin's throwing harder and it's not helping, but at least he's throwing harder. And maybe there will be something there if he finds his curveball again.
You got that going for you, Jake. moving to the Cubs, they get St. Louis this weekend. And then it's the White Sox and Seattle. It's going to be a Not a two-start week for anybody, because as of right now, we're projecting, or RotoWire is projecting, for a six-man rotation, or at least for Edward Cabrera to return next week. And so nobody will get two starts. So yes, we will see. Clay Holmes faces the Cardinals this weekend. Clay Holmes's debut for the Cubs was not particularly good, but he had been out for almost 3 months with a fractured fibula. So are you still in on Clay Holmes, and would you start him this weekend against the Cardinals?
I would. I think that Clay Holmes, sure, the foundation of the Adobe wasn't strong, and it typically isn't, and is still ill, but it was actually a case where he got the grounders that we expect, and for whatever reason, the Cubs defense couldn't handle it that time, and Kovacs was unkind and had a higher BABIP. Okay. He's going to be good with the Cubs. That's going to be a good matchup for him. A good situation for him in general, as Cashew hath arrived. I would feel fine in a 15-teamer starting Clay Holmes at Seattle especially. And I think it should be better this weekend against the Cardinals for him. As far as the rest of the rotation goes, I'm a little annoyed that David Peterson did not have his command again, and it's waning, and it's not the sinker down and away and four-seamer up and in. It's kind of like the David Peterson I remember. So I'm curious how that pans out, but I understand if David Peterson is the one that the Cubs move on from to make this a five-man rotation once again. But we'll see what they do.
Yeah, Edward Cabrera, you know, still ill, as you mentioned. It's nice to have him back. We'll see if it actually comes to fruition. Yeah. But remember that he hasn't been pitching great this year, even when he was healthy with the Cubs. The Reds have Miami at home this weekend, and then they have a full week next week because they have a doubleheader on Monday and no off days. Mm-hmm. So they will face St. Louis for five. And then Arizona for three.
Wow.
And so, and we should also note the St. Louis for five is all in Cincinnati. That's great for Cincinnati and St. Louis hitters, less great for pitchers. I'm curious, Lodolo is set to start Sunday against Miami. It was not a great outing against the White Sox in his first start back. Are you comfortable enough to start him against Miami, though?
Yeah, I don't know if I am. I currently have it as a probable, and I think I needed to grade that to a questionable. Just because the thing with Nick Lodolo is that he is a guy that succeeds when he gets back into rhythm. We've seen this routinely in his career, and it's something that had me lower on Lodolo entering this year, is that he needed that rhythm in 2025 to be that guy. That's how he became incredible, was not being injured for 4+ months in a row. That has not been the case this year. And Lodolo is a strange one where he's a slinger and has to get into that rhythm and get the feel for that four seamer up and in and the sinker freezing guys inside and the curveball looking good in the changeup, etc. I feel like, okay, give him maybe one more at least. And I feel confident that by the time he faces the Diamondbacks, he should be all right. By the way, I'm thinking about the Boston Massacre as the last time I can remember a 5-game series. And if you guys don't know that, that was the Yankees sweeping the Red Sox for 5 games, effectively knocking the Red Sox hopes of a playoff berth out of contention in like August of 2000 something. Don't remember when. Back in the day.
I've blocked that out, so I don't remember. We should also just note for the schedule purposes, it's going to be a 2-start week for Rhett Lauder and Andrew Abbott. They will get St. Louis at home and Arizona on the road. You know, I think that's a usable 2-start for Andrew Abbott because I'm not really afraid of the St. Louis offense, and Arizona has a good offense, but it's not one that I'm necessarily running away from with a pitcher like Andrew Abbott, who we know, you know, can succeed when he's going well against most teams.
Yeah, that was 2006, Boston Massacre 2, and Abbott is Abbott. It's whatever. Also, I should note, Chase Burns is throwing softer, and the Reds are also being very careful with him. So he's actually on the verge of losing his aces against ace tag because it has not been great the last like 5-6 games. Four-seamer is getting fewer whiffs. And we haven't seen the adaptation really of that changeup. He's throwing it a little bit more, but he was actually one of the very few guys just throwing 2 pitches. Mm-hmm. Like actually inside the top 50, just 2 pitches is really, really rare. Chase Burns was doing for a while, having lots of success. Now it's getting a little bit worse. He's trying to do the changeup more. It's not very good. So just be aware of that. Keep starting Chase Burns. But we got to talk about the Brewers. And here's the thing, Eric. We're going to take a quick break first.
Yes, we have to talk about the Brewers. They have a pretty epic weekend series coming up against the Dodgers. And we were very close to getting some great like Mizorowski Skubal or Mizorowski Yamamoto matchups. But we will love what we get. The Brewers get the Dodgers this weekend, and then they have Seattle and Atlanta both at home next week. That is, again, not a two-start week for anybody, because as of right now, the Brewers are still using a six-man rotation with Kyle Harrison back and Dustin May in the fold. We will see how that goes. I think as you have on your document, and as I think has become kind of commonplace, like Mizorowski and Logan Henderson, you're starting against basically anybody right now. I think kind of the same with Kyle Harrison, in particular, sure, against Seattle. And so the questions are Dustin May, Shane Drohan, Robert Gasser. Against Seattle, I would start both May and Drohan. I think May is a little bit underrated still, and I think he's going to be a totally fine pitcher for the Brewers. Yeah, and I'm not going to start Gasser against the Braves.
No, I'm not. This is the Aces Gonna Ace Coronation Day potential for Henderson. That's a sentence. If you guys don't know, like, I give Aces Gonna Ace, and I call Coronation Day when they do succeed against a tough team. So Henderson gets the Dodgers and then Atlanta, and it's like, do that and you have it, buddy. There'll be, what, 13 starts of him just being amazing if that happens. Kyle Harrison was a little weird. And in that last night start, lower velocity and all, and I'm worried a little bit about that Mariners start. Initially had as an auto start, but it pulled down to probable. And I'm curious if we get more there. Shane Drohan also has not looked very good lately. So we'll see how they handle that moving forward. But yeah, Dustin May, I think, is vastly underrated.
Yes. The Pirates, they have Boston this weekend, as we covered, because you will be at one of those games. And then they are home against Detroit and at the Dodgers. It's going to be a two-start week for Carmen Ludzinski against the Tigers and the Dodgers. You are not going to do that. Do we have to talk about Paul Skenes?
I mean, no. You're going to keep starting him, guys. And it's very strange and weird. And he doesn't have his ace tag. And it's very odd. But what are you going to do? You know,
I will point you to the article that I wrote on NBC Sports yesterday, which was a deep dive into all things Paul Skenes. There are some mechanical changes. His arm angle is up 3 degrees. You know, Pittsburgh beat writers want to tell you it's because he gained weight and that changed his mechanics. There's no evidence that suggests that those two things are connected. But I went into detail on that. You know, I would just encourage you to read that. I don't believe that Paul Skenes is like broken unless we're starting to continue to see the velocity and the shorter outings like we saw against the Marlins, because he's pitching through something. There is a chance that he is pitching through some discomfort while the Pirates are in a playoff push. And so that is entirely possible, but we're speculating right now. There's no report that he is injured or dealing with an injury. So I just think you kind of have to continue to use him, especially it's Boston. And then maybe, sure, if the Boston start doesn't go well and you want to sit him against the Dodgers, like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility in your shallower formats. But, you know, there's nothing you can do about it right now. Jared Jones has really started to struggle in his last few also. He gets Boston and then also the Dodgers. It's not a great two-start stretch for him, given the struggles.
Yeah, Jared Jones, it's interesting because he was really good until really the big red flag of his last outing. I watched that one and it was frustrating. It was a rough early time, and then it all fell apart. And I'll put it this way. There are a lot of times we think of starters kind of into two buckets, right? There are the ones who are the boring types, the kind of the Tobys that are going to get volume. And we say, all right, like, we're not expecting this to really push the needle a ton, but this is serviceable and this is fine, right? And those guys are overperforming. We expect that to fall off. Then we have the other side of it, which is, hey, this guy could be that huge impact thing, but they are going through a certain stretch and where they're pitching in their worst, the worst outcomes. And we have to decide, you know, okay, are they going to be, how wide is that spectrum of the worst outcomes for those guys, the electric ones, and how wide is the good spectrum for the ones who are kind of boring, right? And so with Jared Jones, it's always really important to recognize, like, right, he's gone, what was it? It was four straight of one earned run or fewer. Then it was a poor quality start, three earned runs and six against the Diamondbacks, followed by seven innings total in two games of 11 earned runs. And if this wasn't eight, you know, I believe he got pulled with the bases loaded and all three guys came around to score. You know, if this was like three again, I don't think we're sounding the alarm bells, right? Mm-hmm. I think it really gets amplified when you have this kind of a clunker. But Jared Jones should be much better than this. You know, his four-seamer was not going upstairs. His slider wasn't, you know, going down exactly as you wanted it to, right? And sure, it could be something as next year, but it's one of those situations where you're recognizing this is the worst stretch.
Yeah, and I think also, like, we love to say, you know, oh, prospect growth isn't linear. And I think that maybe we should be saying the same thing about, like, return from surgery growth, right?
Sure.
Like, like, you know, he's in his first year back from Tommy John surgery. It took a little while. Things seemed to click. And now they're not, you know, clicking in the same way. Whatever consequences you have from an entire, like, a 14-month layoff, I think we are maybe foolish to assume that you just figure those consequences out and then it's smooth sailing from then on. Like, you can figure some things out and then your body doesn't cooperate, or, you know, some of the inconsistencies because you haven't been repeating the motions over and over again. Like, it, you have to, like, refine it again. And so that's pure speculation. I haven't done some kind of deep dive to suggest that he found it and then lost it. But I just think, like, it's maybe overly simplistic to say, guys coming off surgery, it just clicks and then it remains that way forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to wrap up the NL Central with the Cardinals. They get the Cubs this weekend. They get that 5-game stretch in Cincinnati, and then they get at Philadelphia. Right now, we have Quinn Matthews returning to the rotation on Monday, but that is right now, according to RotoWire, just because of the fact that they have 8 games that week. It's not like him getting back into the rotation. It's likely going to be a 2-start week for Andre Pallante and Kyle Leahy. It's Philadelphia and at Cincinnati. Are you into either of those two guys in a 2-start week?
I mean, maybe Kyle Leahy. Kyle Leahy has been doing more. It's a very interesting situation of, hey, you're getting away with a ton and over the middle of the plate. And you are being very efficient in 2-strike counts. I still worry about the fastballs with him. He does have good enough breaking balls, but it's not a pitcher who I think is truly having that breakout that everyone, or not everyone, but people might think he's having. I understand if you want to take a shot on it, but I don't think so. And also, I know Quinn Matthews coming up, and that's really fun. He's not going to stick around. It's for the doubleheader. It's their extra man, likely. And I wouldn't go after that. I mean, I know that they should be swapping him with Liberatore theoretically, but they're not. And I wouldn't go for this. It wasn't as impressive as I wanted it to be in the debut. And it's at Cincinnati. No thanks.
I'm curious if you saw in this last start from Hunter Dobbins, if you saw the continued change you were hoping.
Well, yes and no. Like, the four seamers there, Bennett's at lower velocity and the command wasn't. And those two elements are pretty important. So I need to see another one to see if that was just like the 92 degree weather, or if actually is not, you know, if he's able to actually repeat the 95 miles per hour and better pitch separation that we saw before.
And it's Cubs Phillies next for Dobbins. So I think you can watch that play out with him on your waiver wires. Mm-hmm. Moving on to Arizona. They're at Atlanta this weekend, then they're at Boston and home against Cincinnati. It's a 2-start week for Mitch Bratt. Have you come around on Mitch Bratt at all enough to use him in this 2-start?
I did get someone upset at me that I wasn't, or not upset, but just like questioning heavily why I wasn't more in on Mitch Bratt. And to put it bluntly, he is not very good. sorry, it is a four-seamer and curveball that is his main 1-2, and they don't get many whiffs. The four-seamer right now is at 17% CSW, as he's throwing it 40% of the time. I don't see it here. I really just don't. I think the slider is more of a cutter, really, even though it has, like, it has 5 mph difference, it has bad movement, 8 and -4. Like, it's just, no, I'm not interested. Changeup's only thrown, like, what, 8% of the time? He's not even trying to be a swatch properly. No, I'm not in.
Okay. Are you in on Soroka, who returned to the rotation?
Soroka looked bad, but it was also a still ill. And the curveball is so important for him. He had a 48% strike rate on that curveball. Ooh, ooh, ooh. We also want to see the pitch separation return that he had before of four seamers and sinkers and curves. Well, I got to wait and see it, because it certainly wasn't there last time.
Yeah. And then, you know, Brandon Pfaadt, Eduardo Rodriguez, they continue to do their thing.
Insane. So, absolutely insane.
They can be trusted in most places.
They both took down the Dodgers.
I know.
What? All right. Just like, fine. Atlanta, questionable. I'll give you that to you. Okay. But yeah, you're pretty much just rolling with them now.
Marcus, really. I think you got to. You're not rolling with any of these Rockies pitchers. Nope. Especially because they are at home all week next week. So you're going to avoid that. The Dodgers, they get Milwaukee this weekend. They are at Colorado and then versus Pittsburgh. It's two-start week for nobody, because with Blake Snell back, the Dodgers are back to being a six-man rotation. What did you see from this Blake Snell debut? And is it right back to, like, hey, Blake Snell, doesn't matter, he's in your lineup all the time?
Right. So I do want to note, the Dodgers did mention that Eric Lauer might not be a starter anymore, and it could be a five-man. Because the reason the Dodgers felt cool doing a six-man before was that Ohtani did not cost their roster spot to be a starter. But now they have to have one fewer reliever to have a six-man. And they are considering not having Eric Lauer and having him more as a kind of a rover reliever now. So it could mean Blake Snell gets a two-step at Colorado and the Pirates next week. I mean, obviously you roll with that. And he even talked about, it's actually kind of funny, I don't know if I want to roll with the one in Colorado, because he was talking about pitching in Salt Lake City and just how uncomfortable he felt because of the elevation. And here you go, you got to go into elevated cores now.
Right.
But I mean, he looks great, obviously. And with Justin Robleski, it's also, with Robleski, it's kind of funny. He's pitching better than he did when he was having like a 2 ERA. For the last three games, I mean, it was 2 games of 4 home runs each, and then he just got messed up again. But he was throwing 95. I mean, yeah, the command wasn't as good. The locations weren't as amazing, and it's regression, clearly, but he should be fine against the Brewers and should be fine against the Pirates.
Yeah. It's funny how that works. That, like, you know, the process doesn't make... shouldn't lead to good results, and it does lead to good results. The process should lead to good results. It doesn't. It is a pitching is a finicky beast. I heard that, you know, Lauer was originally going to be out of the rotation. That's something to keep in mind. Tyler Glass now has now made 2 rehab starts, and so I think you're looking at like late August for Glass now to come back, and that's another thing to keep an eye on. The Padres, they are at Cleveland this weekend, then they have the Mets and Minnesota. It's 2-start week for Walker Buehler next week. It's the Mets and the Twins, which looks enticing on paper, but is something that I cannot do.
I can't either. I mean, I understand that he's been performing far better than expected right now, Walker Buehler. Leaning a bit more into the cutter as well, axing the sweeper and curveball a ton. I really can't. I'm sorry, guys. I just cannot do it. Casey Mize has also been iffy to me. We had the last 3 games we've seen with Casey Mize have been the lowered velocity at like 92. He got skipped. Then he has debut against the Padres, which he's throwing at least 93 and change, but 8 earned runs. And then the last one was down underneath 93 again without the best splitter at all. And slider's just kind of in the middle of the plate. And now he goes against Cleveland, which seems like it's good. But then you realize that for Casey Mize to take down lefties, what's the pitch he has to have, Eric?
The splitter.
Hey, look at that. Oh, pop quiz for the teacher, and he got it. Right, the splitter, and that hasn't been there. And yeah. I'm worried that there is actually something wrong with Casey Mize as he's trying to play for a contract, essentially, right now.
Right.
So I'm very tepid on Mize, despite being so in on it before. Robbie Ray, I am so curious what we get tonight. Recording on Wednesday, guys. I really, really, really hope we start seeing more of the back foot sliders and also the old slider. So what I did a deep dive on Robbie Ray without telling anyone. so just very clearly, very quickly rather, Robbie Ray had a slower slider that had more drop, like 3 inches drop. And then all of a sudden he started throwing one that's more like a cutter, like 87 as opposed to like 83, 84, that had more verts to it. So like 8 or so. And during that time, he stopped throwing his slider. So then now we've actually started to see the last 4 starts that slower with more drop slider again. Awesome. But the thing is, he hasn't thrown it to righties. He's thrown like 17 sliders to righties in the last 4 games combined. So I'm trying to be as loud as I can. Hopefully somebody will hear me. Hey, Robbie Ray, please throw more of those sliders again to righties. You have to get that feel back. It's such an important asset for you. At least he's throwing more 4-seamers again to righties. Hopefully we get the right mix with the sinker. Hopefully we get the changeup working or so. It has been surprisingly good on the ERA side for Robbie Ray, but it's also been like a 19% K rate and a like 11% walk rate during those 1 earned run, 0 earned run games. Not the sustainable kind. So I hope we do see it with him. Michael Keane just had a nice game of actually locating all of his pitches and getting strikes on everything, which is honestly rare, which is surprising at this point. So I'm going to go with both of those. Vasquez, Mize, Buehler, I don't think I can.
Yeah. Wrapping up the NL with the Giants, it's against Colorado at home this weekend. Then it's at Cleveland and at Boston. It's 2-start week for Carson Wisenhunt next week. We've kind of covered that, like, we saw him flash that changeup once, and so like there's a part of you that's like, hey, maybe this will happen, but I don't think it's enough so that I could use this as a 2-start week. I'm curious what you saw enough from Blade Tidwell the other day, because Sunday he's at home against Rocky Road.
Yeah, Blade Tidwell to me went against the Astros, who are right-handed friendly, and what is Blade Tidwell's best asset? Throwing sweepers to right-handers. So he had 12 over 36 or whatever it was whiffs on that sweeper. Great. Or maybe it's 12 over 39. Doesn't matter. My point is that is not the typical day for Blade Tidwell. And I, even though it is Rocky Road, I'm still kind of not in, because it's really 4-seamer sinker otherwise, which are just not good pitches. Now it is also at Boston after. They like throwing right-handers too a little bit, but I feel like this was just a perfect recipe for any chance of success for Tidwell against the Astros.
Yeah. And the Rockies are going to throw tons of lefties at him.
Yeah.
I mean, especially now that Zach Veen is up, with Veen and McCarthy and Moniak and Rumfield, and it's going to be just tons and tons of lefties against Blade Tidwell. And the Red Sox will as well. You know, Rutschman is now up. He's a switch, so he's going to hit lefty. The rest of the Giants rotation, Landon Roop and Logan Webb get the Rockies at home this weekend, which you like seeing. And then Logan Webb, we trust basically anywhere. And Roop is kind of on the fringes for me. It just hasn't come together quite like
we
do. And Cleveland isn't a bad matchup, but I'm not like all leagues have to do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to quote you on that. And it's Landon Roop going against the Guardians, which actually could work for him, because the best pitch for him right now is his changeup to lefties. So if he has that going, then that could still be very solid for him. And it's weird because it was a game of like a sinkers and his cutters not having any feel, which is atypical for Roop. So I don't know. It's a weird period for him. I think it's going to be better. But Eric, we got to go to the AL East and the AL, and we were so far behind, and I'm so sorry. But before we do it, what do we got to do, Eric?
We're probably going to take a break. Yes, we are behind. And so the AL will get short shrift today, but it's just the way it is. Baltimore, they're Tampa Bay this weekend, and then they have a wraparound, and then it's the Yankees and the Rays again. So it's going to be a 2-start week next week for both Brandon Young and Shane Baz. We've seen better run of performance from Baz. So is this a 12-teamer 2-start week as well for you for Baz?
Yeah, I think so. The cutter has been much better. Also, I've been more of a fan of Brandon Young lately, because I think the 4-seamer is better than I expected. Also, when he's not facing a ton of right-handers, he actually gets to go 4-seamer splitter effectively. And that's what actually we just did as well the other night. So I'm kind of interested here. not to mention at Tampa Bay is going to make that four seamer look even better. I don't think I've ever seen a two step against the same team. I don't think I've ever seen that for a guy.
It's very strange. Yeah. And that's, you know, we've got a bunch of research that it doesn't really impact whether you see a team twice in a row and stuff like that. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. Moving on to the Red Sox, they're at Pittsburgh this weekend. Then it's Arizona and San Francisco. It's going to be a two-start week for Ranger Suarez. I'm very confused why you have Suarez as a probable start against the Diamondbacks, but a questionable start against the Giants.
I'm supposed to feel like a worse offense. I'm supposed to flip that. I apologize. It's Ranjer, though. So we have two mistakes we got to fix here.
Is it, though? Because I thought it was, but then he said it's not.
When did he say it's not?
There was like an early spring training story that he said it was Ranjer, and then he also, he said that actually wasn't the case.
He says Ron Hare, but then everyone just calls him Ranger, so whatever is what it was. Okay. My understanding.
Well, Ron Hare, for me, that's a pretty easy two-start week. I mean, I know he's not pitching.
He hasn't been the guy, though. He's been out of rhythm, and when Ranjer Suarez is out of rhythm, it's not good, right? That's the story of his career.
Yes, agreed. I'm not totally scared by either of these matchups, so I would try it. Sonny Gray has been pitching really well. Peyton Tolley looked great in the last one. You know, Jake Bennett, we're talking about him as kind of like a streamer, and he gets Pittsburgh this weekend. Pittsburgh not as good against lefties, so I'm okay with that. Arizona is a tougher start. And listen, look, Patrick Sandoval against the Blue Jays was fine. And if you're in a deeper format, you know, and you want to use Patrick Sandoval, it's Pittsburgh this weekend. It's the Giants next weekend. And so those aren't terrible matchups if you're in a 15-team league. It's just like the ceiling isn't overly high. You're hoping he goes five innings and you get a win. And maybe it's going to be two runs in five innings. And, you know, it's
I mean, look, he has potential on the left side. The changeup is still very good. The breaking ball can be very good, right? Like, that's always been the thing of him. It's about, are you going to get enough strikes with the sinker and the four-seamer that are not destroyed? And those are two aspects. Are you going to not walk everybody? And then when you're not walking everybody, are they not getting hit, right? So we'll see. The Yankees are really simple. Pretty much just start all of them, save for Will Warren. You might want to be a little careful on.
But I did want to ask you, because Ryan Weathers has spoken publicly also about how he has intentionally moved away from the four-seam fastball because he's trying to limit as much slug as he possibly can. And so he's moved away from that pitch. And that was a big thing at the start of the year. We were like, hey, he's throwing more sinkers to lefties.
Yeah.
And he's reduced the four-seam usage. And now he's reducing the four-seam usage against righties as well and really kind of moving away from it. And I thought it was interesting because 2 years ago, Matt Blake basically had Carlos Rodon do the same thing. And he was like, you guys are jumping all over your four seamer. You can't just try to blow four seamers past people at the start of every at bat. And we saw Rodon really kind of take a big jump forward when he started leaning into the changeup, when he was less aggressive with the four seamer. And so recent performance from Ryan Weathers has been pretty good too.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point, Eric, that Ryan Weathers is suddenly throwing sinkers to opposite handed batters, which is atypical. I always believe there's a good mix to be found between them, and it's a trade-off because sinkers are generally easier to hit induce more hits than four-seamers, but four-seamers have a higher chance of leaving the yard because essentially it's just more fly balls or more grounders, right? We like to say, oh, we like grounder guys. Sure. Tell that to Framber Valdez, who allows a ton of hits all the time. Tell that to Christopher Sanchez. It's why he's not having as good of a season as we want right now, because he throws these sinkers that open the door for those really high hit totals on a given night, right? It's a back and forth. So I do like the idea that if Ryan Weathers is getting into more trouble, he could maybe adapt and then go back and forth. And I like that a lot. So it's a really good point there. And I think it's another testament to, he's going to be the one if they have someone to remove from the rotation, that he's the one who's going to stay. And I think Will Warren is made for the bullpen more.
Agreed. Speaking of removing people from the rotation, the Tampa Bay Rays, they get Baltimore this weekend with a wraparound, as we pointed out, and then it's Toronto and Baltimore again. So that's a 7-game week. It's two-start week for both Nick Martinez and Drew Rasmussen. Nick Martinez will get Baltimore twice. Rasmussen will get Toronto and Baltimore. But We might get Shane McClanahan back next week. He's only been out for a couple of weeks with that mid-back tightness and looks pretty good in his rehab start. So either McClanahan is back next week or he wants one more week. But with Griffin Jacks on the IL, it means that Ian Seymour will not be losing his spot in the rotation when Shane McClanahan comes back. And that had been the expectation after they acquired Freddy Peralta. And right. Seymour has looked pretty good of late. Seymour gets Baltimore this weekend, Toronto, and then Detroit. It's a pretty decent stretch. And so if you had moved on from Seymour or were contemplating it when thinking he was going to be out of the rotation, I think that ship has kind of sailed.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, this is the interesting game where I'm in on Peralta because it's in the Trop, and I think the four-seamer will be better there. We are seeing more changeups, like double the amount since he's joined the Rays, even though it was the Green Mile, right? It was in Coors and it was in Sucker Baird, right? Terrible matchups. Everyone's like, oh, it was what a waste of a thing. I'm like, guys, he actually did a 3 earned run, 6 inning game. They're like, that's really good for Sacramento. Please. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. And this actually might be the moment that I'd be interested in Freddy Peralta to see how he does in the Trop. I also do want to mention it was 30 pitches around 95.7 in his AAA game. That is Shane McClanahan. So I do think he would need one more. I mean, maybe not. Maybe it's just like proving that, yeah, my back is okay. I'm stretched out. I'm fine. I'm not like too far removed from this. Because that is good. 96 is what we want to see really from McClanahan. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I imagine he'll be limited in that one if he does get that opportunity. And Nick Martinez, I guess we just got to keep going. I mean, it's what, a 15% strikeout rate, which is bonkers. But I'm just really happy for the dude. Let's be honest. Like, he's wanted a starting gig for ages, and it's always been toyed around with him. And now he finally gets one for a full season. And what does he do? Has like a sub-3 ERA. It's awesome.
And is an all-star. Yeah. Is an all-star.
Amazing.
Good for you, Nick Martinez. And wrapping up the AL East with the Blue Jays, they get the Yankees this weekend. And then it's Tampa Bay and the Yankees again next week. And so it's going to be a two-start week for Jose Soriano, Tampa Bay, and the Yankees. Jose Soriano, who went to the Blue Jays and they said that four-seam fastball, don't throw that so much. Not particularly good. And the Angels said, Mike Maddux, the guy who wanted all of our pitchers to throw more four-seam fastballs, he's actually not our pitching coach anymore. Because apparently the pitching staff was not taking enough advantage of modern technology with the Angels.
Oh my gosh.
Who could have possibly seen that coming? But, you know, here we are.
So, I mean, it's really interesting because a lot of the conversations like, oh, but no, the Angels are going to be better with their pitching staff. They got Mike Maddux. And I think that's a really just, I'm not saying anything about that. Mike Maddux has a long track record of X, Y, and Z. All I'm saying is it's really, really, really hard to understand how pitching coaches and their players are going to interact and what's good, what's bad for them. It's just something that I don't like basing my analysis on. I do like basing my analysis a little bit on general, like the general extremes of like, we know this is not a good pitching organization as a whole. And this is a good one as a whole.
And those are the rare. And that's why I think it's important because you have to think of the organization. And so the pitching coach works within the organization. And so some organizations will push technology and that kind of data. And a pitching coach will then have to use that stuff. And other organizations won't. Yep. And so, again, this is not a Mike Maddux specific conversation because we have not talked with Mike Maddux or worked with Mike Maddux. So we don't know how he coaches pitching, but it's entirely possible that his approach with the Rangers was different than his approach with the Angels because maybe the Rangers organizationally require certain things that the Angels organizationally don't. So again, that's just to your larger point, we can't keep getting off track because we have gotten off track a bunch. Dylan Cease continues to pitch well. I know it was he labored against the Red Sox, but you're not worried about it. And then, you know, Jose Soriano, it's one start. We're not going to read too much into the changes, but I appreciated it. And the rest of the rotation is a big shoulder shrug for me.
I got to say this. The four-seamer, 80% strike rate in that game. Everyone's like, oh, the four-seamer's getting cut. The real important thing is that he's throwing more curveballs again. And when Soriano is actually killing it, like in a believable way last year, it was, remember, a few four-seamers. It was when the curveball is awesome and he's getting strikes with a sinker. That is it. That is really it. And by the way, he didn't last five innings. Why? Because he had a 31% strike rate on his splitter that he threw 25% time against lefties. Like, this is, these are the actual little things that are going on in a start. Yes, fewer four-seamers doesn't surprise me. But if he's actually throwing 80% strikes on four-seamers, well, right, against lefties, but like, that actually when is you, good for him.
Yes.
Right?
When you're throwing it far less, when you're throwing it far less often, we could steal a strike with this. And I'm not, and also, the strike rate being better is also because the Angels were aggressively having him elevate above the zone to try to get whiffs. So naturally, they're not going to be in the zone that much. Mm. This last start seemed like he was trying to steal some strikes with the four-seam fastball as kind of not a like a surprise pitch. Like, hey, so I'm not throwing this a lot.
Called strike 11 thrown. Just want to say that's an 18% swing strike rate. Okay, I'm just messing around. Let's move on here. We're taking so much time. That's all on me.
Yes, we're going to move on to the White Sox. They get Detroit this weekend, then the Cubs and the Mets. It's two-start week for Luis Castillo. I think we should just up front, like, has anything changed for you with Luis Castillo now that he's on a new team, or nope, is it the same approach? Okay. So really, it's Sean Burke in this rotation. You could trust Sean Burke against basically anybody, and then maybe Castillo and Anthony Kay are matchup plays, and that's kind of it.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Burke, obviously incredible. Anthony Kay, right? I do wonder if it's not going to be Urquidy next week. It's going to be Jonathan Cannon. Could be something along those lines. Not interested. So, yeah, it's just pretty much Kay. We keep going with it. It's very boring, but fine. Anthony Kay. Ha! Told you, Eric. And just kidding. And then Sean Burke, of course. It was amazing.
Yes. And you should note there was a lot of hullabaloo around the White Sox calling up two young pitching prospects, Tanner McDougal and Hayden Smith.
Right.
They are going to be in the bullpen. That was part of the plan. So don't expect them to get into the rotation, but keep an eye on them because they both have a chance to be in the rotation in 2027. And so this is kind of like an audition for them. So just see what they're doing out of the bullpen. Yeah. The Guardians get the Padres this weekend. Then they get the Giants and at Colorado. So it's a two-start week for Foster Griffin next week. It's the Giants and then it's at Colorado. In a 15-team league, you're doing that because Foster Griffin's been just good enough. But in a 12-team league, does the at Colorado talk you out of Foster Griffin in a two-start week?
I mean, Foster Griffin has just not really been great. His swing strike rates have dropped massively lately, and I'm not convinced that he's anything more than a Toby moving forward. So I have him as questionable, a decent amount here for moving forward. I be careful with it.
Yeah. Joey Cantillo, it's the Padres this weekend. It's at Colorado. If you wanted to skip it, fine, I understand it because it's at Colorado. I'm still okay with Cantillo. And then just a note that he gets the Angels the week after. So if you're going to skip it, I wouldn't drop him. I would just skip it and hold on to him because things should continue moving smoothly after that. The Tigers, they get the White Sox this weekend. Then they are at Pittsburgh and at Kansas City. It's two-start week for Framber Valdez. It's Pittsburgh, Kansas City. That Kansas City start is intriguing. They might have Vinny Pasquantino back, but that's, you know, something to add to that. But in a two-start week, Framber Valdez, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, is that 12-team leagues? Only 15-team leagues?
Yeah, Framber, look, he just went seven innings straight out, right? Oh my gosh, he's back. He's great. No, he had four double plays. Four double plays to get out of that. It's not Framber, it's not that guy. And maybe I'm too cruel at Pittsburgh. I think it should be a questionable because Pittsburgh, I think when initially made this, Pittsburgh was really good against lefties. And now they are not. They're actually not. They're like one of the worst now. So I'm fine with that. For Jack Flaherty's still ill there. Jackson Jobe, I think it's going to be worse velocity. I'm scared that it's still like 6 feet of extension. And I liked his command a lot. But I still worry that we're going to get the Jobe from before, which is not really an exciting swing strike rate. And it was a really fun debut, but I'm kind of tepid on the next 2 months. Definitely spec ad. I hope so.
Sure.
I'm just not expecting what we just saw to be replicated.
Yeah, that four-seam command in that one was important up in the zone a lot. And so that's why if you take what is a mediocre four-seamer in terms of including everything, right? Including extension, including, you know, shape, the vertical movement on it is pretty good. And so the vertical movement on it is good. The velocity on it is pretty good. If you're going to locate it up, that's going to hide some of the deficiencies. And he did that much better in this first start.
Yeah.
But just like we talked about with Jared Jones and that pitcher's coming back from injury, it's not like it clicks and it's smooth sailing. if the command of that four-seam fastball is kind of like in and out over these first few starts, that could lead to some struggles. But I'm with you. Jackson Jobe is worth an ad because of the upside of his raw stuff. But, you know, maybe
be more in the secondary because I don't think the four-seamer actually is that good of a shape. And with the extension, you see like 98 or so. Great. But it's going to settle right at 96, which then turns into 94, 95. Yeah. And that is actually going to be a hittable four-seamer in my view.
Yes.
So it really will depend on the changeup, the slider, maybe the cutter and curveball as well, really to take off.
Right. Well, super hittable. I mean, again, like I said, keeping up in the zone for me just hides some of the deficiencies. Sure. It doesn't make it a good pitch.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yep.
It hides some of the flaws. I'm curious just very quickly, Drew Anderson.
No, it's
not stretched out. We assume he's not staying in the rotation, right?
He's not stretched out yet. And maybe or so if there's some problem with Jack Flaherty and they don't feel really great about that. But yeah, I would not expect that to continue.
Okay. The Royals, they have the Angels this weekend and then the Athletics at home. So not in Sacramento for four and the Tigers. It's two start week for Michael Wacha and Daniel Lynch, the fourth. We chatted about this in Discord. Good for Daniel Lynch. He's going to get a chance to start. He is not nearly stretched out. It's going to take a little bit of time. So this two-start week is, you know, you might get five innings out of
the two-start. You might get more if he has a wonderful BABIP or so. Sure. I don't know if this stuff is worthwhile anyway. Has always been in question for him. So actually not initially, and then it got worse when he got to the majors. Michael Wacha, you're going to roll with that easily in a two-step. Randy Dobnak, he is a... I mean, he's just trying to get Koufax on his good side, and it's a possibility. So if you're in a deeper league against the Athletics, hosting them, and then at Los Angeles, it's very possible he could pull off six innings, five innings of one and a run. It's just not worth the ceiling, in my view. It's very susceptible to just like a five-earned run, 10-hit game that I just don't want to put myself in the way of. And Noah Cameron's looking great. Even though he went against the Dodgers, he almost pulled off a six-inning, two-earned run game. And he's throwing 93-94. Command is much better than the secondaries. I dig Noah Cameron. We're going to talk about the Twins and, of course, the AL West. We're going to do that after this break.
Moving on to the Twins. It's Philadelphia this weekend. It's Atlanta and then San Diego. That's a two-start week. Oh, no, it's not a two-start. Oh, they have a six. They have a six-man?
So this is the situation. Joe Ryan might be coming back.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
And Joe Ryan, we don't know if he's coming back or not. So if he isn't coming back, Connor Prelip and Dean Kramer are going to go Friday and Saturday. That would mean then Bailey Ober would get a two-star week, who has not been sitting above 88 for a very long time. So I cannot trust that one. Connor Prelip, I think over time becomes better. He has one of those stat lines that you see like five innings, 300 runs, five hits, two walks, seven Ks, and a lot of whiffs. It's like so prototypical of a guy who's amazing the next year because he has, the way I see it is that you just think of it like a percentage of at bats or like plate appearances, right? Against batters that they're executing what they want to execute versus not. And as you get better in the majors, you do, that's a higher percentage for you. So Prelip, when he executes what he wants, he's killing it. And a lot of guys don't have that ceiling. Like when they do what they want to do, they still are susceptible to things, but then Connor Prelip doesn't do that every time. And then, okay, not as good in at bat. So I don't know when that percentage is going to keep ticking up and up and up. I'm going to say 2027 better, but it could be right now. And I think it's worth the ceiling for that. Dean Kramer, I'm going to upgrade from do not start to questionable start against the Phillies.
Okay.
Because I think that we just saw Dean Kramer kill it against the Orioles. Definitely had more emotion as he was throwing harder and it's a revenge game, all that kind of stuff. But more importantly than the velocity was a splitter and the cutter command was exactly what we see when he's going on one of those good runs. I love to see that. I hope he can hold on to that against the Phillies and the Padres. Taj Bradley is back to his chaotic self and he gets Atlanta, so no thank you. I mean, I guess do what you want. Zebby Matthews, no thank you as well.
Yeah. Moving on to the Athletics. Yes, thank you to Jacob Lopez, who continues to pitch well, as you had kind of called out, and he gets Rangers this weekend. Then the Athletics are on the road all next week. Kansas City and Houston. That means you're going to get Jacob Lopez on the road, but you're also going to get Gage Jump on the road. Has been much better on the road. He has one bad road start, and it was that debacle against the Diamondbacks. But the vast majority of his road starts have been really good, and so Gage Jump next week against the Royals on the road, I would have that as a probable start if I were you. I don't like this Royals offense too much, and Gage Jump has been good enough on the road that I'm in on that.
It's actually really interesting. You can probably do this with all of them, save for Jacob Lopez is just executing the same exact command that he had last summer And we've now seen it for five starts, save for like a weird one last time where the cutter was outside the zone. The four-seamer was in it as opposed to the reverse. Doesn't matter. Same upstairs location. Sweeper was amazing down, as we want to see. The way I think about the Athletics is because of their home park, they cannot be consistent. They just can't. They just get disrupted. It's kind of like the Rays last year with George Steinbrenner Field, where they go out and they make feel better or not, but then they have to adjust back home and they might feel better there, and then they get worried on the road. So I can't really say for Jacob Lopez just doing this, and that's great. Mm-hmm. I can't with JT Ginn, with Gage Jump, with Jack Perkins. I can't buy into one game going to the next or so. And that makes it really tough because Gage Jump's success is so closely tied to having sliders and four seamers for strikes. Those games, especially when he doesn't have the slider for strikes, is just, you can't do it. Then there's a game where it's like 60% four-seamer strikes, like not going to happen, right? We just saw it against Red Sox, though. He had both of those. Excellent. JT Ginn is not featuring good stuff at all, and it's very risky there. Perkins can have it, cannot. Like, it, I don't know how to make any of it. So that's why it's all questionable. If you want to be aggressive and say, look, I need those strikeout potential with Gage Jump, absolutely. I think they're not going to strike out as much as your Red Sox. But I think that's generally feels like it's worth it. But then Gage Jump wasn't worth it for like four starts until that Red Sox game. So it's all risky to me.
Both Red Sox games.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, sure. Yes. And then it's weird. It's just weird.
I get it. It is weird. What's not weird is that the Orioles are a contending team again, because that's just what the Orioles do. They are inevitable. They get the Mariners this weekend, including Sunday Night Baseball against the Mariners. And then it's the Angels and the Athletics. It's the Athletics in Houston. So that's a two-start week for Hunter Brown, Angels and Athletics in Houston. You love that for a two-start week. Christian Javier continues to use the cutter, which we do like, but that start against the Padres was not great.
You know,
and so I'm curious if you are like 15-team league Christian Javier shallower.
No, so Christian Javier, it's very interesting. This is the best I've seen Christian Javier since like his debut season. Maybe I could be forgetting more about the next one as well. But what is fascinating to me is that Christian Javier is doing two things that we've been waiting for. Throwing strikes, 63%, actually no, 72 overall strikes in his last one, and throwing a cutter. That is another pitch that is getting strikes. The only reason I think that last game was not good, it was 5 innings, 400 runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 2 Ks, was because his put away rate overall was 13%. However, he got to 2 strikes 63% of the time. So think about that. Over half of the batters he faced, he got to 2 strikes and he only fanned 2 of them. That's really disappointing. He faced over 20 guys there, right? So if you look at Christian Javier's stuff right now, well, he's throwing 93 with a good vert. Like that's there with a really flat attack angle, right? The sweeper is moving. The changeup is getting strikes. The cutter, like this should actually be more efficient. And I want to put out an article or something, Eric. Somebody will write it. Don't you dare do it for NBC Sports. You can write for me, but not for them. Which is analyzing 2 strike rate and put away rate as luck stats for pitchers. It's like the one. It's the true strikeout luck stat in my view, because it's about, you know, how you're performing and are you executing in that moment as opposed to the whole game, right? And you see this all the time with high whiff games. You have a few strikeouts, right? Because you didn't throw those whiffs at that time or so. You didn't do enough at that time.
We could go on a tangent about that. Yes. Because I talked to you about like guys who get into 2 strike counts and don't get strikeouts. Like, can you say, hey, they need to throw this pitch more? But then you were suggesting there's some research that shows that it's not that, like, you know, sometimes it's, you know, foul balls and whatever it is. So it's not saying you're not good in 2 strikes. It's a little bit of like,
it's just like there are all these little elements that happen and there are things that can just not let that strikeout happen that one time. You can't throw that right slider that you need to at that moment, whatever it is. Yeah. So I actually do think that Christian Javier is really interesting. If you want to buy low that no one is really interested in at the moment, it's Christian Javier. So I would not be out on this against the Mariners and then the Athletics and 15 teamers. I think that is a guy to circle.
Speaking of sliders, Hayden Wesneski has come back and leaned very, very, very heavily into the sweeper. And that's going to work against right-handed lineups and maybe a little less so against left-handed lineups. But that's something to think about, because Wesneski is somebody we were intrigued by, the, you know, sinker sweeper mix against righties, I think is a good one. I think he'll struggle against lefty heavy lineups.
Yeah. Wesneski had this amazing game on the 4th of August where he executed everything like textbook command, like where it's supposed to go. Got really hyped about it. He was going into San Francisco. I was like, that's awesome. Circling that one. 7 innings, 3 runs. Yes. 5 hits, 2 walks, 4 Ks. Okay. 10 whiffs again. It was like it's actually 3 straight games of 2 walks, 4 Ks, and 10 Ks, which is 10 whiffs, which is kind of hilarious. Exactly to that T. And way worse command to lefties. Did not execute sinkers inside to righties, four seamers up to righties. And he kind of did have the sweeper still. Cool. But only 56% strike rate on that sweeper in that one. It took me off of Wesneski because I was really hoping that we would see better command. Like that was actually his thing is I'm good at that sinker inside. I'm good at that sweeper away. And it's really about making sure the four seamer gets involved more. Maybe the cutter is actually going to be that stabilizing pitch. So that was a little weird. And that's why I'm out against the Mariners, but I think that he'll get it back. And then by the time he has Oakland in Houston. So that's why I have as a do not start. And then a questionable start for Wesneski. Yes.
Now moving on to the Angels. They have Texas this weekend. They have Kansas City this weekend. Then Houston and Texas. It's a 2-start week for George Klaassen, who was called up and we said, hey, George Klaassen in the minor leagues, they shifted kind of like his focal point and the command numbers in July were like really, really, really good.
Way better.
And then he came up and the command was not really, really, really.
It was the adrenaline of coming back to the majors. It's
entirely possible.
And that's the thing. And like now he gets at Houston and at Texas. If you're in a 15 team, you're like, I need something here. I would consider it. I mean, he might still be limited. And also, who knows who just stepped in the Angels and all of a sudden it's like, hey, Klaassen, do this. Who knows? Yeah, and
we should note, again, we're recording this Wednesday. So Klaassen starts tonight against Texas. We don't know how that start goes.
Yeah.
If the command is better in that start against Texas,
and how are you going to find out about that, Aaron?
Feel even better. How are we going to find out about that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go to the dashboard.
Oh, yeah. You're going to go to my dashboard. I mean, next week you can do that, but you're also going to read the SP Roundup and I'll let you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But I can look at your dashboard now.
Yeah, you could.
And then the rest of the rotation, like, you know, Detmers and Walbert Urania, you're still trusting in pretty much all matchups.
Yeah, Urania had a one bad inning, guys. Don't worry.
And I'm not interested in Yusei Kikuchi potentially returning next week.
Right.
Maybe if he has a few good starts, but it's not like Kikuchi was like firing on all cylinders before getting hurt. And so
it's kind of wild that like, I forgot all about him. And Grayson Rodriguez, by the way, is so close and so far. Like four-seamer changeup could be a really good 1-2. And as long as the secondaries actually step up and become something whiffable, I think there is some potential there. But he doesn't have a breaking ball that's above like 85, which is kind of shocking. So I'm curious to see how this progresses for him. But I'm not going to rule out that Grayson Rodriguez could have some serviceable starts down the stretch.
The Mariners get Astros this weekend, and then at Milwaukee and against the Cubs. It's 2-start week for Bryce Miller. Are you panicked yet about Bryce Miller?
I mean, of course. What I'm most panicked about is his secondary command. Now, last game in Safeco, at the T, whatever you want to call it in Seattle, he did have his secondary command, right? And I know the velocity dipping underneath 96 is a big issue. However, if he's able to locate the four-seamer, locate his secondaries, he's still really good. And that's actually been the biggest thing this year for Bryce Miller. It's not really been the velocity, but the fact that the secondaries are not just these, I don't know what's going to happen pitches as it used to be in his career. I don't know if that's going to stick on the road. It's been this weird thing with both him and Wu, and I get it because at the tee is really nice for pitchers and gives them more confidence, all that kind of stuff too. It's a real test for him against the Yankees, and I think that will dictate how we feel about at Milwaukee. And then, of course, hosting the Cubs, you should feel all right with that one. At least Brian Wu really came out and threw harder and was like, I'm great against the Yankees. So hopefully we can see the same from Miller as well.
Yeah, that was going to ask you about the Wu one. So yeah, Woo! Moving on to the final team for the day. It is the Rangers. They are at Sacramento this weekend, and then it's Washington and the Angels. It's 2-start week for Cal Quantrill, which is unfortunate because Washington and the Angels, it was pretty intriguing.
I'm not going to rule this out, Eric. Well, I won't. I know it sounds weird.
Yeah.
I won't.
And yeah, I was going to say this is right now the expectation is that Quantrill is taking Nathan Eovaldi's spot in the rotation because Eovaldi has gone on the IL. But the last comments we got about Jordan Montgomery were that they were unclear if Montgomery was going to start or relieve. And that was when Eovaldi was healthy. And so I wonder if the Eovaldi injury has maybe changed that calculus in is Jordan Montgomery going to start or relieve? We haven't had any reports yet.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Eric. The reason I'm talking about Cal Quantrill in this interesting way is because he's going the Cannibal McSanchez with four seamers up and cutters down with an effective splitter lately with inside sinkers. Like, he's made it actually work across some of these starts. It was 5.1 innings and six innings, each of one earned run in his previous two starts. And then he had a relief appearance, right? After Jacob DeGrom went. And Jordan Montgomery, if you're wondering, well, hold on, what about him? He's back? Oh my gosh. He had one game. It was under 90 miles per hour. So that's under 2.5 ticks of what we saw in 2024 from Jordan Montgomery. And he did have a changeup away. It was a lot of the same boring, and more boring that we've always seen from him. So I mean, we need to see more there. But if it's Jordan Montgomery against Washington and against the Angels, I mean, it's not out of the question because he's up to 80 pitches and he went four innings. But I am more intrigued by Cody Bradford against the Angels because Bradford, even though he throws around 90, he got whiffs on his four seamer in the first start. He didn't in the second one, but he had a better changeup in the second one. Bradford's a swatch before he was cool, right? 7 feet of extension as well. Some good vert on it. That could easily work. Mackenzie Gore, I'm not as in on, even though he just had an amazing game with a golden goal. Why? He had like an 85% strike rate on his changeup, a 55% swing strike rate, 12 over 22 whiffs against the Angels, who we just talked about. Right-handed lineup, really susceptible to right-handed sliders or, of course, changeups away as lefties. That is what happened. It's the best game I've ever seen Mackenzie Gore with his changeup. Fastball was bad. It was like a 53% strike rate. Yeah, he had a really good slider as he constantly has against lefties down and away. I don't think that this changeup is going to be as good moving forward. And I'm not saying don't start him again against the Angels. Like, you got to do that. But at Sacramento, be very careful this weekend with Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah, and Jack Leiter starting a rehab assignment. So we're a few weeks away from Jack Leiter entering back into this mix. And so that whole, like, hey, is it going to be Jordan Montgomery or Cal Quantrill? That might only be for a few weeks. But we'll keep an eye on all of that. And we did it. We had some microphone issues. We had some tangents, but we got here in the end. And Nick is going to take off. Yes, we went a little bit long, as we do. Nick is going to take off. I am going to be out at the beach next week, and so we'll find our time to record. But we will get this to you again next week. It's going to happen. We'll figure it out. And hopefully everybody enjoys their week and weekend of baseball. Hopefully some of you go and check and see Nick and hang out with him and his Achilles boot PNC over Park there in Pittsburgh.
On Saturday night.
PNC Park. I am Eric Smolsky, Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go give my microphone a stern talking to.